sailing home, slow hair.
This is Bird's Eye View, your sailing podcast. Live, Sail, Die have put together what we hope is going to be the most informative and entertaining sailing podcast you have ever heard. I'm Darcy Watergrave. I'm hosting and trying to keep these two roustabouts calmed down. Joey Allen, Barbara Kendall, two of the biggest names in New Zealand sailing. We'll be broadcasting from the Royal New Zealand Yacht Squadron's Crow's Nest, one of the iconic rooms in New Zealand sailing. Lock yourself in. This is going to be fun. Hi, welcome on in to the Crow's Nest and welcome into Bird's Eye View. My name is Darcy Watergrave. This is your sailing podcast. And no, it's not just me. It's a couple of superstars of the game I introduced to you. Not that she needs any introduction. Hey, Barbara Kendall, how are you doing?
Good, good. Really excited about our inaugural.
I'm glad you're excited, not freaked out, because our other guest is freaked out. Our other host is freaked out. Joey Allen, you can't quite deal with it. Are you okay being like, I'll be all right. I'll just follow Barbara.
You don't want to say that if you're winning.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. What Barbara are we going to be doing? Behind.
I'm going to try and control these two as we take a really good in-depth look at all facets of New Zealand sailing. We're going to go from the very top, America's Cup, right the way down to just falling around on your Optimus. They probably don't exist anymore. It's been so long.
No, they do, They do. I'm gonna. We've just done really well at the World Optimus Champs in Italy, I think it was, and we had a young girl place seventh in the gold fleet over 200 competitors or so in it. So
shows how long since I've been anywhere near. I was a very young man in that as well. We're gonna get stories from all sorts. We're gonna have guests as well. Right across the entire length of the podcast, how long we go. And our philosophy here with this, thanks to Live, Sail and Die, who are the architects of this chaos, is to bring you unfettered access, opinion and facts as well around the world of sailing. We're not connected to anybody, holding to anybody. We're not paid by anybody in a position of power. So essentially, we can say and do what we like as long as we think it's relevant, and we're always keen to hear from everybody out there. And it's great to be up here as well. How's the history in this room? If you don't know, this is the Crow's Nest. This is where Sir Peter Blake, well, he was the architect of so many great things in New Zealand sailing, wasn't he?
Yeah, it certainly feels like we're in an amazing little room here. A lot of history's gone down around this table. And it's an absolute honour to be sitting right here right now.
Were you ever allowed on this table back in the day or not?
I never allowed here. I'm guessing this is where people got banned. So I'm glad I haven't been here, mate.
And Royal New Zealand Yacht Squadron, obviously thank them very much for allowing us to pollute this hallowed room with all of our talk. Right, let's get stuck into who our guests actually are. I'll let you know a wee bit about who I am later on in the piece, but let's face it, I'm the conduit, I'm the host. I haven't got the history, the breadth, the depth of history that these guys have. I'm just one of the guys on the sidelines who shouts and chucks fruit at them. That's the media for you. Barbara Kendall, wow, what's not to say about you? Right from when you started sailing, right the way through to where you are now in a position of, can I say, power, but an influential position on the board. I'm not talking about your board, but the regular boards as well. So just give us a skinny. If you were to describe yourself, I know you don't like talking about yourself. It's okay. Who are you? What are you? Why are you?
Well, it'd probably take us the whole podcast to go through everything.
We got time.
Yeah, we might have to do this over a series, but probably currently, we'll start with the current. I am a vice president of the International Surfing Association. So boards without sails and surfing.
How do you feel about that?
I love sail. Oh, it's my other pastime, is they? So they're kind of like the windsurfers. They're like windsurfers, or most windsurfers surf. So there's a big crossover. And I've been on that board now for about 10 years and instrumental in helping getting surfing to the Olympic Games. So surfing debuted in Tokyo in 2021. And now we're in Paris coming up in Tahiti, which we can talk about later.
Hardly Paris.
Yeah,
I hope you had
yeah.
nothing to do with the fact that we're going to a cheese grater. Well done. One of the biggest, most violent waves in the world. But anyway.
Yes. On. Yeah. Well, that's Chopo's a pretty iconic wave. But so I really helped, and I'm guiding the federation and what it's like to be a new federation within the Olympic movement, because windsurfing was like that back in '84. And sort of guiding the governance and helping with the athletes' commissions. And and sort of the politics that go on sport, because I'd been an IOC member. So I'd been an International Olympic Committee member for about 11 years. So they call it like being in the Vatican of sport, the highest political voice of sport, where all the big decisions are made of like where the Olympics are going to be, what sport's going to be in the Olympic Games, and how they're going to spend $3.25 million US a day and giving it back to sport to make sport happen around the world. So it was quite a big position for many, many years.
Before you go on, how did you find yourself in that?
Oh, that's a whole... I slipped through the cracks. I'm a very good person who's sort of just like, oh, here I am. How did that happen? I tend to say yes a lot and then get myself into trouble like this podcast. Okay. Oh, yeah, I'll give that a go.
Why not?
And next minute, you know, I'm here. But anyway, that's kind of that part of the history. And then in and around Oceania particularly, I worked a lot around with Oceania athletes for a good sort of 10, 12 years. And then what else? I've just been sort of a high-performance coach for New Zealand water polo. Yeah, so that's a lot. But we can go over those stories later. But as far as sailing goes, 5 Olympic Games, 3 Olympic medals. And
you've got the box set.
Yeah, I've got like a lot of things.
Yeah, but that's you've got a gold, you've got a silver, you've got a bronze. Please don't tell me you're in the sock drawer.
No, actually I had to put them in a safe because we just about lost the house in a fire. So I was like, okay, we better put a safe in and because I look back on it now and go, wow, those are actually pretty cool. But when you get them, you go, oh yeah, it's just a medal and away we go, you know. I was very laid back and casual about the whole thing.
Tell us about young Barbara Kendall and how you actually got into the sport. What was your initial...
I didn't have a choice, really.
Yeah. One of those.
Yeah, I was one of those kids that was in a carry cot at 10 days old, taken away on the boat with my mum and dad because they were mad keen sailors, and pretty much been sailing since I was 10 years old. So I was brought up on a boat, sailed to Fiji in our boat, did blue water, and then got into did the usual P class, Starling, and then I went rogue and I went windsurfing.
So like a rebel, that's like a snowboarder out of a skiing family, isn't
exactly.
it?
And so that's been an interesting journey, being a rebel of the sailing, so not really sort of like the traditional sailing pathway, more of a rebel. But you know, I competed on a professional circuit in windsurfing for 10 or so years before my sport was Olympic, so sort of done it all really, because that was the only way to make money,
right? Professionally, back in those days you couldn't.
Absolutely not.
We all know who you are and what you've done, and we're going to dig further into that as these podcasts continue. I'm looking forward to dragging some of the tales out as well.
Oh, there's a lot.
Here is our key storyteller, Joey Allen. What's not to know or like about Joey Allen, what he's done? What's the best way to describe you aside a raconteur and a Bowman extraordinaire?
Yeah, my story's a little different. Yachting gave me a position that suited me perfectly. I didn't have the intelligence to steer a boat. I didn't have the concentration to trim sails. I just like being in a chaotic situation, which is what a bowman is in, and I just love the violence and the chaos of it. It suited me perfectly.
And obviously the boisterous nature of it and the physical nature of it as well. I mean, you can't be a tiny little unfit man like me now, can you?
The position changed as the boats got bigger. The athlete needed to get bigger, and that's what sort of ended my career. Is it very quickly became a 70 kg bowman was never going to cut it, and that's sort of what ended it. But it was certainly a good long ladder to be on while it lasted.
So where did you start off? How did it all get underway? Are you from a sailing family as well?
I'm from a sailing family. We live very close to Barbara. We lived out in Howick. And
you guys haven't known each other that long, have you?
No, because I didn't really meet Joey until...
You were a teenage girl.
Yeah, I was pretty young.
Yeah.
Got to know your sister really well.
Yes. But we all grew up in the river, in the Tamaki River. And, I remember very clearly the moment that I became a bowman. I was a kid that got very seasick. When I was young, my mum and dad took me to Fiji a couple of times, and I vomited all the way there and all the way back, and I was hopeless.
That's why it was a bowman, because you're at the front being sick. Is that right?
Did it spray over everybody when you were growing up?
Sprayed mum and dad, you know, constantly. But, yeah, one day I was outside the Tamaki River, and I was on the bow of a corky little yacht, And I just thought, wow, this is a really cool sensation. And unfortunately, I'm 66 and I never really got back in the boat at all. I stayed there my whole yachting life and no regrets. No regrets.
It'd be good now to even have any use for bowmen in this modern age of foiling and wings, I suppose. You just sit there redundant.
It worries me that it feels to me like the position's become extinct. But last week I was in Palmer helping Neville Crichton, a legendary yachtsman from New Zealand.
Well, he's a guy you spend a lot of time sailing his boats with.
Over the years, he was inspirational and helped not only myself but a lot of Kiwi boys. He gave them massive opportunities. But to be there with Neville and Palmer in a 140-foot J-boat, it was very cool. And feeling that I could help young guys get spinnaker poles back into the game was pretty cool.
Because you've been involved a lot in coaching in America's Cup. Once you actually got off the boat, you started getting right into that. So what was the drive behind that?
It's funny, the coaching, when I got into coaching, my position was being phased out. And what happened is the bowman got replaced by the Code Zero, basically. The minute you could furl sails up, we became extinct. So what you're looking at is an old dinosaur sitting here, Brent.
Yeah. Yay, go the dinosaurs. They're very popular.
Are they?
With the young kids, particularly.
Kids all love a dino.
Yeah.
So now you're a senior statesman. It's a nice thing to say. You're lucky you got senior. I like the idea of being a senior statesman. Grey hair, it means I've lived more than anything else. You're carrying a very modern nickname, aren't you? GMJ.
Yeah, I knew this would come up.
Jibe Mark Joey, where did it come from?
Look, I'm in a very...
He's very defensive right now, isn't he?
I'm in a very special group of elderly athletes, and I won't mention too many names.
Mention them. I mean, this is your chance to hold on, really.
Yeah, look, I'm learning to wing foil at 66, and I got to be honest, I never thought I could do it with my shoulders from years of yachting, but it's something that I can do very badly. But I'm with an incredible bunch of guys, Mike Sanderson, Mark Orams.
Oh, the professor.
Yeah, Ian Darby, and the Craig Satherthwaite, the list goes on and on and on. And we're having so much fun with this new form of our sport. And it's like learning to sail all over again, and the joy of you know, a challenge that is out there. It's amazing. And we've had these adventures all over the harbour through this winging. And
do you feel a bit dirty, like running away from traditional sailing, being an old man?
No, it feels... Barb, can you explain how...
Yeah, it's like you have this... It's like when windsurfing first came in, and it's this whole new sport, and you're a pioneer of the sport. And then the learning curve is so steep that you feel yourself getting better and better and better and faster and faster and faster. And you have this independence and this freedom on this craft that you can go as fast as anything that's on the harbour if you want to. And there's no noise. There's no... Physically, it's actually quite easy if you can get the balance and the feel of it. So you come in and you have... It's like you've been to the gym, but nothing hurts in a way, apart from if you fall off a lot and you get whiplash. But it's the challenge of it, and then when you get up and go, it's just like flight. It's like you're a bird on top of the water, and that's the closest you get to what it's like to fly. And it's simple and it's easy, and it's very addictive. Which is dangerous because it's very addictive, and your whole life just changes, and you just can't. You're just like, oh, can we go wingy? Can we go wingy? It's exactly what happened to me when I got into windsurfing.
Do you think if you don't fall into the sea all the time, you're not going to be hurt?
No.
So there's a reason they call you Jibe Mark Joey, right? So
yeah, let me
all the time lying.
Yeah, let me talk through the nickname, because I fall off so much. Andrew Mitchell, Marco Orams, and Mike Sanderson, I'm their Jibe Mark. So, you know, you've fallen off, you're not feeling too great, and then you have these three idiots jibing around you, you know. Thanks, Jibe Mark, and then off they go. Yeah.
They've given you like a vest so they can see you?
Well,
You have to wear helmets. You wear helmets. So you wear helmets and impact vests because when you do hit the water, you can get winded a little bit. So most people that do it, and it's smart too because you've got daggers underneath your board. So if you do fall strangely, you don't want to have a ding with this foil. So helmets and do you wear a helmet in a...
100%.
Yeah.
And you've got a fluoro vest though. So
yeah, we've done...
Spot you the mark.
We've been doing these downwinders where we'll leave Torbay and hopefully end up at Takapuna in a nor'easterly, and it's just mind-blowing how much fun it is. But what Marco and I learned on the first day was how separated you can get because you're doing big speeds. You're doing, you know, we're probably under 20 knot, maybe just under 20 knot where we are.
Yeah.
And you get separated and you can't see each other. And we've had some amazing adventures. Auckland Harbour is designed for winging. In every wind direction, every tide, there's somewhere where you could go.
Have you got over to the Manukau, or is it just all
no? We don't. We've talked about it. We've looked at it, and it could be in a southwesterly. It could be a good option, but we've got so many options here. It's unreal.
As far as safety is concerned, with the speed you're going out there and the amount of traffic that's out there on the Waitemata, that's got to be, I mean,
we don't need
orange
road cones out there, mate.
So, but as far as your speed is going, the people are picking you up on it, you're quite safe out there?
No, you're not safe.
No, you're not safe. And actually, just recently, I think we had a big northeasterly a couple of weeks ago, and at Manly, because a lot of them, where I am in Whangaparoa, they do a lot of downwinders from Army Bay, which is the tip of Whangaparoa, back down into Orua. And wingers go out, this is ideal, you know, when it gets to 30, 40 knots and these huge waves, they're all doing downwinders. And then you've got, you know, some people up in the cliffs up at Whangaparoa calling up the Coast Guard, I can see a winger out my window, they're sitting on their board. You know, perhaps you should send the Coast Guard out. And then, so one of our friends, one of the mums that we know, because we have a whole lot of kids up in Whangaparoa doing it, rang up. She's on the Coast Guard, said, don't worry, that, you know, it'd be one of the kids having a rest. And then it happened to be one of the guys that owns the shops up near where we are, and he'd got himself a little bit tired. He was having a little rest. So, you know, and then I've had other people that winged over to Rangitoto in a big, strong northeasterly, and their wings popped. And that's a long way to get back from Rangitoto paddling. So they've actually paddled into Rangitoto and rang somebody from, because they take cell phones. It's the best form of communication. And their mates come over in jet skis and pick them up.
Talk to us about where it came from. I know this is all very new, and I'm sure there'll be people out there who've got no idea what you're talking about. Hardcore sailors might object to it. Like, people didn't like snowboarding back when I started because it was all about skiing. This is new and fangled. Just talk us through what it actually is, what you're using. Just strip it right back.
Right. So right back, it began with surfing, actually, and Laird Hamilton in Hawaii, who's like, the man. Yeah, the waterman of the world, he started putting foot straps on a surfboard, and then they started playing around with foils and towing into the big waves and foiling on big waves, and that's where it began. So just tiny little surfboards with foils. Then
I remember way back when, in the early 90s, a good friend of mine bought an air chair. I don't know if you remember those.
Same sort of thing.
Same kind of thing.
So that was the concept around the early 90s, and then kite surfing came in to the play. So you've got two sports that are kind of going in parallel. So blow up kites on strings, and kite surfing became the huge rage for many. We can talk about this in another series, but it took out windsurfing from the Olympic Games after 2008, and then it got put back in, and it's very controversial anyway. Then, so you have the kite surfing, they evolved to where they were blowing them up. And then somebody had the idea, why don't we produce a wing that you can hang on to and put it on a surfboard with these foils, and that's what created wing foiling. So they started with kind of quite big boards, like stand-up paddle boards, because that was my first foiling board. We were one of the first people to get a foil in New Zealand, and we jimmied up an old stand-up paddle board and shoved a foil in the bottom of it, and with a towing behind the dinghy, and we spent the whole Christmas holidays learning to foil on these big dinosaur boards behind a dinghy
with a number 8 wire kind of jury rig.
Exactly. No, well, this is, we didn't even have wings at that stage. Right. It was just boards. So we spent the whole time thinking, this is a bit of fun. Let's just, you know, it makes sense because you only need a dinghy with a 5-8 horsepower motor behind it to go wake surfing in a way. So we would be towing all around the harbour with this board, and all the kids came and joined it. We'd set up at Downham Manly, we'd have this continual stream of kids that we were teaching how to foil behind a dinghy. And then when winging came around, it was actually John Paul Tobin who bought one back and said, Bart, you've got to have a go off this. And so he bought a wing, which is the blow-up kite that you hang on to, up, and he had a board and we had a go. And within, you know, one session, I was up foiling pretty much straight away. And then that was the beginning of the end of a lot of trouble.
What about yourself when you first got on one? What was the feeling like?
It wasn't the first go. Thanks for that.
Oh, sorry.
No, I struggled. I battled and battled away to get going.
What was the most hard thing for you, though? What was the most difficult part of it?
It's very weather dependent, and I was always going out in the wrong weather. You know, too keen to get out. And my biggest issue was not going out in enough breeze.
Yeah.
You know, it loves a lot of wind.
You can't be afraid. What happens is there's a certain speed that you have to get up to. When you get to that certain speed, then you start to lift. So it's a matter of learning how to power up the wing to get to a velocity that lifts the board out of the water. And then that's a whole other set of instructions. So first of all, it's like windsurfing, just with a wing, but it's not attached. Then you get to a certain speed and the board starts to lift. And once it starts to lift, then you have a lot more steerage. And that's where you've got to get your balance right for the feel of it and have your feet in correctly the right spot. And once you get all that, if you do it behind a boat first, it's a lot quicker than just trying to do it winging, you know, sailing wise. So you get the feel of what it's like to fly in the air and to turn it across wakes. And then so when you put the wing onto it, it's quite easy after that because you just get to a certain speed and away you go. And so that's how we usually.
So I remember when the air chair started, and I don't know how many times I did my shoulder and trying to actually operate, getting it up and getting it on the foil and moving around. It was the most surreal feeling. Then you put your hands down and you shoot in the air, and then your shoulder goes.
Yeah. And I think
pole right behind you.
The kids pick it up so quick. So all kudos for Joey for giving it a nudge, because, you know, actually it was quite funny because when I first did it, I was sailing along, I was waiting, thinking, oh, this is pretty good. You know, I'm old enough to be able to still learn this sport and flying around. And then I just look at the shoulder and go, hold on a minute, it's a woman. Another woman doing it. Wow. And I'm like, she's not young. And then met her on the beach, and she was this is 4 years ago. She was 65 years old. She went to win one of the first women to do it in New Zealand.
Yep.
And she'd never windsurfed. She'd stand up, paddled a bit, but she was a glider pilot. She flew gliders. And so her and her husband got into it. He was 70 and she was 65, and this is about 4 years ago.
But if you want to get really demoralised,
you're so uplifting.
Go up to Manly.
Yeah.
Go off the beach, and if you can see what the young, you know, Russell Coutts and Barry Toms boys are doing up there, they are going so fast. That's the foiling centre of New Zealand.
It is at the moment. We've got a bunch of about sort of, my daughter's actually one of them, and we all corrupted them about 4 years ago, and we had a whole lot of them going through the program. And
Interrupt you. So those are kids that are we going to see back in yachting ever again?
Well, you've got Russell Coutts' son Matthias is in the 49er, but most of them, no, none of them want to go. They're either on wasps, but they've canned the wasp to go winging. So we have a good fleet of about 10 or 12 kids that are under 18 all winging that are, I reckon they'll be beating, you know, they'll be top in the world pretty soon.
Accessibility and cost, is that going to do with it?
Totally. It's the cheapest form of sailing right now. You can get like kit for $4,500 on the water and away you go.
Yep. And will they end up in the moths?
Some of them in the moths, definitely. A lot of them in the moths, actually, because they're great transferable skills. And actually, you'll find a lot of the Sail GP guys, a lot of the America's Cup guys, most of them are all foiling now because yep. it's the feel, it's the angles, it's learning how to, it's all very similar and very cross, good cross training for all the classes.
I agree. Like reading wind at those higher speeds is something that the average yachty doesn't experience. Like we read wind at 6 knots.
Yeah.
These guys are, you know, like Matthias Coutts, they're reading wind at 18 knots or, you know, high speed.
Yeah, and then also there's a lot of tactics, and because when you go through the lulls, you can actually pump the board and pump the wing and pop through, and sometimes it's worse than actually doing all the little ticky-tacks of yachting, you know. So it's there's just different tactics involved.
But how much trickier is it downwind, you know, with the apparent wind and
Yeah, because
pressure sailing.
And also the surfing of the waves, particularly if you start to do it in big swells and stuff, there's a lot of technique and sailing by the lee on the waves, surfing and downwind.
Hey, can I, Barbara, how do you get that scar on your face? Can we talk about it?
That's a surfing accident. I got 18 stitches in my face from a surf.
Can you talk us through it? Where were you?
On the outside of the barrier. And that was so scary because I felt the board, it was wind, it blew the surfboard into my face. And I was like, oh, that hurt. Then I put my hand up to my face and my fingers went right inside my cheek.
Oh.
And I went, shit. That's the first swear word on this podcast, by the way. And then I was like, oh my God. We're on the outside of the barrier.
Who were you with?
Well, some mates. We were all in boats surfing off the bar in Okiwi Bar. And so I paddled out to the boat, went up into the boat and climbed on the board, and the guys and my friends were on the boat. They looked at me and went, and their faces just dropped. And I went, oh shit, it's that bad. Oops, second swear word. And they went, yes. And I thought, we're going to have to call the nurse. And so fortunately, the nurse picked us up from the campground there, and there was a locum on duty who was an All Blacks surgeon, All Blacks doctor. And he, when I walked in, he says, well, you're not the most famous person I've stood up. And he goes, and you won't have to go see a plastic surgeon, and you probably can go surfing tomorrow. And I went, you're the man. And so, but I didn't go surfing the next day because my face looked like a chipmunk and it was very, very painful. And I was quite traumatized by the whole thing.
Is that the worst you've had in all of your career in sailing?
I've got some good stories about, I've got 120 stitches in my leg from a motorbike and about 15 stitches, not from sailing.
From a motorbike? You took a bike out into the ocean? That's impressive.
But that's, not so much from sailing, they're all from doing extracurricular adrenaline junkie type activities.
So you're the same as your bro. Who's the worst?
Oh, Bruce. Far.
He is a full hand grenade.
Yeah, he's in cat of nine lives.
Yeah, and he's used most of them.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, I have my brain attached to my body most of the time.
I've spent a few hours in Kaitaia Hospital with your brother.
We've all spent hours in hospitals with my brother.
He must have come close. I think it was a time when you're on Yamaha when they thought there was a sail caught underneath. They threw you overboard, but it wasn't a sail, was it? What was it?
No. Yeah. Mark Hauser. Lying down below, freezing cold. Under a space blanket, off watch, sort of on a standby. I can't remember, but it was cold. It was cold, so it was somewhere pretty miserable. And I'm obviously asleep down below and get the shake on the shoulder, and it's Mark Hauser with his bad breath breathing all over me, going, Joe, there's a leather jacket on the rudder, and he'd concocted this plan. If we said it was a piece of plastic or a piece of seaweed, I would have said to him, stick it up your bum, you deal with it. He said, it's a leather jacket, thinking that'll get me up to go and jump over the side in freezing cold water and get the leather jacket off the rudder. So stupidly, I woke up, and by the time I got on deck, the boat was going backwards. They were trying to back this thing off, and it wasn't clearing. And Herbert's going, all you got to do is just take all your clothes off and jump over the side and rip this, and you'll have a leather jacket. It looks like a real good one. I'm half asleep. So I had enough intelligence to think if I jump under the boat while it's going backwards, wasn't going to be too smart. So I waited I'm standing there in the nude and I'm about to jump.
It would have been very little Mark at that stage. I would say little Joe at that stage.
It was very little
freezing
Joe,
cold, yeah.
I can promise you. Anyway, it's not easy to have a Whitbread 60, parked in big sea state. It was a tricky situation. The mates were flogging. Anyway, I'm just waiting for my timing to jump over the back of the boat, and the boat stopped, and this massive shark was hooked on the rudder, flapped out, and it went mental under the boat. And I looked at Herbert Mark Hauser and said, that's the strangest leather jacket I've ever seen. One of the dumbest ways to wake someone up.
Well, at least you didn't get in.
Yeah. Well, I'm like a
cockroach. It was the shark that was on the...
Well, the shark was bent around the rudder.
Wow.
And it was a big shark.
My goodness.
We didn't get a really good look at it, but you could see the fins smashing into the hull. And,
wow.
Yeah, it was an amazing story.
Yeah. There was no phones or cameras or anything at that stage, was there? Or was there?
We had video cameras, but I would say we... I don't think we ever turned them on. You know, they were trying to get in the Whitbread. It was sponsored by a brewery then. It was a different race, you know.
Yeah, and
they wanted bad behaviour.
But if that happened in today's time, it would just be all over the...
Yeah.
From about with their phones, and it'd be like...
Yeah, it was...
The irony about it, they called you GoPro Joe for a while, didn't they? Because you were right into using the GoPros when you were in your training era and you were looking after young sailors coming through.
Yeah, that was in 2013 in San Francisco, which was one of the most phenomenal America's Cups that I've ever been involved with. That was insane. And yeah, I ended up running all these GoPros, and I'd put 11 on at the beginning of the day and take 5 off, because there'd be 6 of them still in the harbour to this day, blinking away somewhere. And then go to Grant Dalton and say, hey, I need some more GoPros. And yeah, he'd politely, in his way, tell me what to do with my GoPro.
More swearing, yeah, no. Yeah. Write me the check more than anything.
Exactly.
We're in the crow's nest, and I would like to thank everyone concerned for this so far, especially the Royal New Zealand Yacht Squadron. They're allowed us up here in this very sacred, I can say, a sacred room. In New Zealand sailing, and I think we're going to have plenty more tales, excuse me, from this bloke and from this lady as well, as we carry on with this Bird's Eye View podcast. I'm not really sure if anyone cares too much about my history in sailing, which is fairly remote, but it's probably worth saying a couple of things. What do you reckon? Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, just to know, I started sailing with a good friend of mine, Andrew Reed, with his brothers, Thomas and Richard specifically, on a boat called Vendetta. I don't know if you remember Vendetta, a great big slug of a thing, weighed about 14 tonnes. So it was built to travel all over the Pacific. So the father, Bill Reed, wanted it that heavy, so if it hit a whale, it would just carry on going and no one would die. So my first big race in that was from Port Nicholson down to Aotearoa. My first big experience in coming out of Port Nicholson.
How old were you?
I was very old. I was 20, 21, 22, because I met these guys and they were riding to sail and said, you want to come along? You can be rail meat. I didn't know what that was. I do now. And come blasting out of Port Nick, and all these little boats are broaching all over us, but we just like straight through the middle. Just bam. So I'm really liking this. And I like the preamble. They sat up all night drinking rum.
That sounds like my sort of crew.
Yeah, and yelling and screaming and partying. So the whole idea was that by the time everyone woke and got ready for startings, everyone was absolutely buggered. Everyone else, we were fine because we are heavy drunks, but everyone had the noise and the drinking. So I started doing that. I haven't done a great deal. I've done more races with AJ up the coast, down the coast as well, and a bit messing around in the Waitemata again with AJ, one of the most ferocious captains I've ever had anything to do with, because man, he can swear and he can shout as well. So it's been limited. I've done a few races. I've very much enjoyed it, but in my time broadcasting on News Talk ZBI, I made a wee list of people that I've spoken to, Dennis Connor and Brad Butterworth and Russell Coutts and Burling and Hugh and Ray Davies and Grant Simmer and Serena Taylor and
any Kendall,
the outside of it as well. I think I might have talked to you a couple of times. I think I might have been done. Shoebridge, Barker, Ashby, Maloney, Bond when he's involved, Schnackenberg. Going back to the Superior Sailing Center.
Some woman.
Leslie Egnott, plainly, was fantastic. Molly Meach is wonderful. Always like talking to Joe LA. I talked to Shirley Robertson as well. Did a big cast with her. She was amazing. Bianca Cook. There was a lot of it. So I've spent a lot of time on the mic asking questions more than actually involving. I'm one of those. I don't do. I say more. It just gives you an idea. But you know this because I've pestered you before, and I'm going to keep doing it because you're so keyed up in this.
Yeah, well, you know what? I was just thinking when you're speaking, isn't sailing an amazing sport? Because it's one of those sports, doesn't matter what age you are, you can get into it and learn. Like, So whether, you know, you were 21, I was 10 days old, Joey, you were young. But I've got adult friends now that have never sailed before who've bought a boat and taught themselves to sail at the in their 50s and 60s. They said, I've always wanted to do this. And finally, they get a share in a boat, you know, and away they go, and they take their boat away for 3 or 4 weeks. And that's what's the beautiful about sailing, and that's why we're here, because it's not just the racing, it's not just the America's Cup, it's not just all those people who have sharing that love of sailing.
Well, it's messing around in the water. That's what it is, basically.
Playing on the water.
That is, or as someone described to me once, sailing is taking a wheelbarrow of cash to the end of the pier and dumping it in.
Break out of 9,000.
Saying that was fun.
Hey, listening to you just then, I want to apologise. I left the name out of our foiling group. And that's Leslie Ignott. She's a very key part of our group. And I have so much respect for that woman.
She was a real trailblazer, man.
And you've mentioned Dennis Connor and Leslie. Man, that's a good story right there.
Yeah.
One other time.
One other time, because we are running out rapidly of time. But basically, this is us. This is, can we keep calling you Jibe Mark Joey, or is that?
It's getting a little old.
Yeah, okay, fine. We're going to come up with another nickname for him. His name is Joey Allen. If you don't know about him in sailing, there's something particularly wrong with you. And I think we all know Barbara Kendall. I'm Darcy Waldegrave. This is the three of us. This is Bird's Eye View. We're really looking forward to bringing you numerous episodes in and around the wonderful wide world of
and
sailing.
And guests.
Oh, I was going to talk about the guests. That also, here's my other host. You just roll on in. What else are we doing?
Just don't forget the guests.
I'm not going to forget the guests.
And if anyone has even made it to the end of this podcast, that's amazing.
Yeah.
It's not bad. It's only half an hour of your time we've stolen. Coming up in the next edition, we're going to focus on the Olympic Games, something very dear to your heart. It's oh so close right now. There's a big team going over for New Zealand, but a controversy floating around that team too. We'll talk about the classes that are being involved in with New Zealanders, which is all bar one, what it's like to sail in Marseille, and we'll get more stories, I'm sure, out of either of these two. So thank you very much, Royal New Zealand Yacht Squadron, for having us up here in this amazing room. On behalf of Live, Sail, Die, my name is Darcy Waldegrave. I hope you've enjoyed it.